Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. We will get into all things Tennessee Titans with him, taking your thoughts on the college football playoff. Take your thoughts on the Predators, any way you want to take it, on our phone and text lines. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrow coming up later this hour at 7:45. Pigskin Pick'em, the second one of the week, at 8:30 on the program today. So looking forward to all that. Joe, a really cool day on Wednesday for Steven Stamkos. He gets his 600th goal. He becomes the 22nd player in the history of the game to reach that mark. And in Steven Stamkos fashion, it was a nice one-timer from the left circle on the power play, which is, if I had to venture a guess, how he scored probably about 275 of those 600 goals.
I was going to say about 400 of them.
Like it is, it was vintage Steven Stamkos. Good play by Forsberg to get the puck to him. By the way, a good win for the Predators on Wednesday. They were down 2-0 early to Vegas. They come back, they win 4-2, and then they played again last night, Joe. And thinking about where this season started and how a few weeks ago they were dead last in the NHL, had they won the game last night, which they did not, but had they won the game last night, they would have been in a playoff spot this morning. Now, it goes to show you, Seattle beat them in regulation last night. Right now, Seattle has the last wild card spot. And this time a week and a half ago, I mean, it was a disaster up there and we were talking about how bad things were. The Predators are at 40 points. They're still only 6 points up on Winnipeg, who is currently the last place team in the NHL. Hell, the Bucks been hurt for them, and it is not going well for the Winnipeg Jets. But it is amazing, Joe, given the realization that a lot of these teams in the West right now, from San Jose on down in the wild card race, are like right there together. Had they won in regulation last night, the Predators would have been in the playoffs.
Yeah, I just went through this, and so I think last place in the West is, what, 6 points out of a playoff spot, I think? And in the East, it's like four.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wild over there. I mean, the East is completely, like, top to bottom. It could be – you could flip it in, like, 10 days.
Yeah.
Now, the West, obviously, you got Colorado doing ridiculous things and all that, and Dallas really good. But I saw some – so the Preds were, what, 12-5 before last night's loss,
correct,
right? I've seen some conversation to the effect of this stretch, the way that we talk now about the – was it 18-game point streak?
Yep.
Is how we will talk about this couple years from now, which, you know, I have no idea if they're going to sustain it. I have no idea if they're going to be in the picture all the way. Again, good for them. Credit to those guys, the players and coaches, for doing what they're doing, you know. Also, I can't blame a Preds fan for having some misgivings and reservations and concerns about, like, the big picture.
Well, Vingan put out some numbers yesterday that were pretty interesting because, you know, people were asking, obviously, as you said, about the 18-game point streak from a couple years ago. So Vingan put the numbers side by side of, you know, a couple years
ago. Expected goals and everything. Yeah,
on the 18-game point streak, they had the most goals in the league over that stretch. Their expected goals for was fourth in the league. So, I mean, it basically lined up with what you were seeing. They were the best defensive team in the NHL over that stretch, and their expected goals against were second. So everything that you were seeing from a results standpoint during the 18-game point streak a couple years ago kind of matched up with how they were playing. Right now, and this was, again, before the game yesterday, so I don't know what the updated numbers are here, but in their run where they were 12-5 heading into yesterday's game, they had the third most goals in the league, tied for third during that stretch. Their expected goals for was 22nd. They had the 11th most goals against. The expected goals against was 21st. So those numbers would tell you that they're probably way overperforming right now based on how they're playing. Now, I will say this. If you watch them play, they are clearly playing much better than they were to begin the year. And it's not just they're getting some fortunate bounces here and there. They are getting some of those. But I think they're clearly, on the whole, playing better than they have early in the year. I still think, and I threw this question out there the other day, like, if you're a Predators fan, do you believe right now? And a lot of people were like, yeah, like, they're a lot more fun to watch. They are more fun to watch. I still watch them, especially at their center ice spot, and I'm like, I don't think they've got enough gas in that tank to really put together a serious run here. And again, it's a more complicated picture this year anyway, because right now they're in the playoff race. But what does that mean? Right now, basically all these teams that are together for the wild card spot are like playing for the opportunity to potentially play Colorado in the first round, which is not something you want to be doing, I don't think.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Well, but then again, I guess you could also be like, yeah, but you're in a big enough conglomerate, thank you, Fernando Mendoza, that you could also be a bump ahead, you know.
You could. I mean, you could end up in that first wild card spot, but then your reward is probably Edmonton.
So, I mean, it feels like the top half of the West is already –
It's already done.
Yeah, and they're already way better than any of the wild card teams. I mean, the contenders are already there. It's going to be Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota, Edmonton, Vegas. That's it. Those are your
and even
in
Vegas,
the West.
Like,
those are your cup contenders.
I would probably at this point. And I know Vegas can get there, but Vegas has actually lost more games than they've won. They just lost 11 of them in overtime.
That's
why they're where they are in the standings. And I know they've dealt with some injuries. To me, there are four teams in the West right now that are just an absolute monster to think about. And that's Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota, all in your division, by the way, and then Edmonton that you're dealing with out there too. Now, look, just because you're dealing with four juggernauts in the West right now, that's not a reason to be like, well, what's the point of making the playoffs? Like, I understand that.
Yeah, you're competing every night.
I'm just saying, like, it's shaping up to, like, very rarely in an NHL season do you look at the Predators, who are legitimately in a playoff race, and you look at the top of their division, there is a 27-point gap between the Predators and the Avalanche right now.
Yeah.
27.
That's insane. No, the Predators, again, good for them. They've gotten themselves into the mix, and you think about where they were, it's pretty impressive work. And sure, they're a contender to get in the playoffs. They are not a contender to do anything in the playoffs.
No.
And they won't be.
And I think everybody still understands that.
Yeah.
I think. Like, you know, look, the players in the locker room, it's one thing, and they have clearly started to believe a little bit here, and that's great. The more interesting question to me now is Trotz, like, what do you do with this? Because on the one hand, like, it looks like Steven Stamkos has figured some things out, and we've talked about that. And he's under contract for 2 more years. So I would assume that in the next few weeks here, I mean, the Olympics are right around the corner, and then after the Olympics, you're going to get pretty quickly into a playoff race and the trade deadline coming up. I would assume during that time, you're going to have a lot of people calling about Ryan O'Reilly. You're going to have a lot of people at this point, based on the way that he's playing, probably calling about Steven Stamkos. And then you can add a few more guys to the mix if you want, whether that's your Buntings or maybe even Marchessault, who I know he's been hurt right now. What do you do with that if you're Barry Trotz? Because on the one hand, like, what if you're in the same spot you are right now, which is a point or two out of the playoffs? Do you just punt on it? Because that would honestly probably be what I would do. Like, I would probably listen to what I think are going to be pretty good offers, particularly on O'Reilly, that you're going to get, and it would probably be to the point where I'd be like, yep, I'll do that. Does Barry Trotz do that? And if he does, what does that do for the veteran guys that are left around after the trade deadline? Because not all of them are going to be moved.
I dare say it might be toxic if he moves those guys. Like, then Sarah Valley will actually be, see, I told you. Yeah. I just knew that they were going to trade those guys and piss off the entire locker room.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's – and this is where it gets interesting with, I think, career front office people who, like – say what you want about, you know, like David Poyle, but to me, like, David Poyle is a career front office guy, and I think in this situation, we know that he obviously at the end there he was buying, but that's because they got so close, right? You know, right. Like we were so close. Like, he'd be a guy who I'd be like, yeah, you're going to get what you can't get. You got to look at the real situation. Trotz is a coach by trade, and he's connected to the locker room and to the players and to the coaches. And I do wonder if that is going to tug on the heartstrings a little bit and convince him to let these guys play it out.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Like John from Nashville says, I understand what you're saying. However, don't forget the Preds have beat the Avalanche, the Wild, and Vegas. Now, could they beat them in a series? Probably not. That's what John says. I understand that.
Yeah. A regular season win here and there happens from anyone against anyone.
Probably not.
I mean, I understand that it doesn't happen very often against Colorado this year. But, yes, to your point, it's worth noting. But, like, I just look at the roster, right? Like, you're looking – when it comes playoff time, we've talked about this a billion times. When the playoffs come around, your center ice depth in particular is just so important. And right now, I mean, like, the Predators have Ryan O'Reilly playing at a high level, and that's good. And then beyond that, it's like, well, get what you can get from Eric Halla. You know, Svechkov is playing a little bit better.
Sure.
So that's been good to see. But they just don't have it right now at center ice.
Right. So if they were – you know, looking at this like they really want to do something, they'd try to bolster that. But that would be,
I don't think that would go well.
That would be malpractice, frankly.
Yeah. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Titans taking on the Jags this weekend, the last game of the regular season. Can they hang in there against a team that totally dominated them a few weeks ago? And if they could get a win and spoil Jacksonville's divisional hopes, how big would that be for this group heading into the offseason? We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. If you're looking for a good spot to watch NFL games this Sunday, come by Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer. Join 102.5 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the Jaguars. Pregame show brought to you by Parma Tractor and Equipment and Old National Bank. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. All right, Joe, we got a big showdown coming up this weekend in the Milky Pool. Jacksonville, a 12.5-point favorite against the Titans. Everything's still on the line for Jacksonville. Well, not everything. I mean, they're in the playoffs. But the division's still up for grabs. You got the Jags taking on the Titans. The Colts, who will be starting Riley Leonard, taking on Houston. If the Titans can beat Jacksonville and Houston beats the Colts, the Texans will win the division coming up on Sunday. So still a lot at stake for Jacksonville heading into this game. I mean, I guess that there's a chance that Jacksonville could still get the one seed if Denver loses their game, which will not happen, against the backup quarterback-led Chargers, Trey Lance.
Trey Lance time.
And then New England playing Miami this weekend. If they both lost, I think Jacksonville would end up with the number one seed. I would not expect that to happen, but I guess it's technically still on the table for Jacksonville. So, Joe, on the Titans front, this will be the last time we see them play for several months. It is an opportunity here against a team that basically just totally embarrassed you a few weeks ago. And we talked about, there have been a lot of bad performances to sift through and to choose from from the Titans over the last few years. The Jacksonville game at home a few weeks ago was right up there with pretty much any of them when it comes to futility and what we saw. The Titans have played better since then. So what do you make of the opportunity now in front of them to take on a very motivated Jacksonville team that, frankly, I think it's going to be hard for them to even approach winning the game? Can they hang in there and show a little bit of fight in this one is kind of what I'm looking for the Titans.
Yeah, it's too bad, really, that it's honestly too bad that the Jags are too good for this to be really a big high pressure thing. I think it'd be more exciting for the Titans if they had a chance to really ruin something for them, but they don't, because they're fine and they're not, like you said, they're not realistically going to get the one of those teams at least is going to win, and they're probably both going to win by a lot.
Yep.
So it's kind of too bad that you don't have that, because I do think psychologically, if a bad team late in the year plays a team, especially a division rival, which is always at the end of the year, and has a chance to mess something up for them, I think sometimes that really plays into these games. So really it's just a matter of, look, it's their last time out. It's the last Titans football game that we're going to be talking about that counts for a long, long time. How much do they care right now? Because last week they just sort of disappeared in the second half. when it was like, hey, they actually are putting together a little run here late in the year, and they just, their defense just evaporated. I don't know. I don't know what to expect, honestly. I mean, I expect them to fight. I expect them to be up for this game because, again, it's just like us talking about it or watching it. They also only get to play 17 games. Like, football players do like to play football games.
Yep.
Typically, you know. So I think they'll show up, and I think they'll be motivated. It might just be that they just match up so poorly that it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I would hope that it looks significantly better from the Titans than it did against the last time they saw Jacksonville. If not, then I guess I don't really know what you take away from that. Like, if it doesn't, if they just get absolutely destroyed and look, frankly, like they don't have a pulse, which is what they look like the last time they played Jacksonville, that to me is a problem. Like, I don't expect that. Like, I think there's a chance that they could lose this game in by double digits for sure. The last time they played Jacksonville, frankly, they looked like they just didn't care to be out there. And that was the most concerning part. And Kuharsky basically asked them that after the game. And, you know, Skoronski and others have talked about in the aftermath of that, how they use that as kind of a rallying cry to show that they give a darn.
Yeah.
So I expect that part of it to be there. You know, Trevor Lawrence and that offense are playing really well right now. And the Titans, the reason that I'm just nervous that this is going to get out of control, it's because the secondary the Titans are tossing out there. Like, I mean, we saw it last week. When you have the secondary that they've got right now, I just don't know how realistic it is to hang in an NFL game against a quality opponent.
Yeah, secondary like that, you better support the heck out of them with one fierce pass rush or it's just going to go poorly. And yeah, that's the thing. It just may be a bad matchup and just a much better team beating a much worse team. But, yeah, you want to see wherever the Titans have an opportunity. You know, again, you want Jeff Simmons to do as much as he can to wreck the game. You want to see the offensive line be physical and run the ball like they've been doing. And, of course, you know, Cam Ward's going to have to play really, really well. And it's important for him, obviously,
sure,
to go out on a positive note and, you know, and try to have a little bit of momentum going into the offseason. But, you know, it's – I don't know. I mean, like, how excited are Jacksonville fans? Like, is this going to be, you know, a full house? Like, are they like, all riled up in Duval about this team? I mean, they should be, but you kind of never know with that whole thing, too.
I mean, I'm looking at Titans and Jags on StubHub. I can get in section 436 for $65.
Okay. That's actually not terrible, though. Like, that's, yeah, that probably means it's going to be pretty close to full.
What section is the Milky Pool? That's what I want.
I don't know. It's in the one end zone. They're probably going to need to get extra
too
chlorine.
Too expensive.
Extra chlorine for this one. What's the temp?
Is it
going to be swimmable that day? I mean, those people can – they put enough antifreeze in themselves before games.
It's going to be 61 on Sunday. That's a little cold. Is that thing heated?
I was going to say, I don't know if it's heated other than naturally heated by suntan oil and
I mean, farts. I've been all throughout the state of Florida in the wintertime. I mean, usually the pools are heated. So I would hope that one's
most
got
pools
a little,
are heated.
Little bit of juice to it.
I guess that's true, yeah.
Get in there.
Yeah. The Milky Pool is open. Let's go.
I mean, if you're going to have the Milky Pool, you need to be prepared for colder weather, right?
You should.
Like, it should be. The playoffs are around the corner. They're going to host a playoff game, I think. You ought to have that thing ready to go for playoff football.
If you're going to be in the playoffs, if you expect to be in the playoffs, then the Milky Pool should be well heated. And speaking of let's go pee, we also have the urinal, which hopefully Kuharsky will give us some videos. So I want people to be able to see this thing. It's really crazy. Also, did you see, speaking of Kuharsky and Skoronski, did you see the very awkward Kuharsky giving him the good guy award?
I did
My
see that.
God. Teresa, please take that over from PK, okay?
And then you were very good with us and said a lot of nice comments.
And Skoronski's just sitting there like, thanks.
Thank you.
I guess, thanks.
Titans official account tweeted out the video of it. It was special.
Well, that's great. That's great.
Peter, I really appreciate how nice you are. You talk when it's bad and when it's good. Thank you, Peter.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will continue the discussion on the Titans and the Jags.
Get him off the camera. God. I'm talking about Paul, not Peter.
More coming up next. Rob Peter to pay Paul. 102.5 the game. Tonight on Totally Hits 93.3, catch MTSU men's basketball as the Blue Raiders take on Louisiana Tech at 6:30. Coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode coming up here at 7:45. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8. We will get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. So, Joe, take Cam Ward out of the equation. You can pick a Tennessee Titan in this game to have a great performance against the Jacksonville Jaguars, being the last time we'll see them until next year. Who are you picking if you could pick one player?
If I could pick one, it'd be J.C. Latham. Just have a dominant, just be an absolute brick wall and get some pancakes out there and just look like a really good player and have that momentum taking the offseason. I'd probably, right after that, go with either of the young receivers. I mean, it's anybody who is going to be, you know, is going to be part of the core of this team. I could also, I know you said one, and I'm going to take any possible answer you give, so that's really awesome of me. But, you know, if 98 destroys the game, that'd be cool to see because he deserves it. I think Jeff Simmons should be an all-pro this year. I doubted that he could get to the level he's at this year, and he has. And so that would be a cool – and I think he's also – he's embraced the leadership. He's gotten better in a lot of ways, so that one would be cool too. But, yeah, I'd go with Latham.
I got one for you that's
okay.
off the board that I don't even know if he's going to play this week. Femi Oladejo has been a full participant in practice all week. He is, you know, obviously coming off the fibula injury, but he's been a full participant all week. I think it's important that he gets out there. And, look, I understand that, number one, we didn't see much from him before the injury. Number two, like the expectation that he's going to come off the injury after not having played for a couple of months and in week 18 against a motivated Jacksonville team do anything out there of substance is a heck of a lot to expect. I understand that. But it would be very nice, I think, if you're the Titans, to see him get out there, number one, and number two, be able to make, you know, 3-4 plays in the game where you look at and you're like, whoo, look at Femi Oladejo out there. You know, that's your second-round pick. And I know everybody basically just wanted to give him a wash and it's a redshirt year and all this other stuff. That's a second-round pick at a spot where you need a bunch of players. It would be really nice for him to, number one, get out there. And I guess he's going to. I mean, he's been a full participant all week. So I think it's important that they get him out there and that he can make some plays.
Yeah. It's interesting because you could also argue, like, man, he just came back from this serious thing. Are you risking something, putting him back out there like that? Like, how many snaps would he even, you know, be up for playing?
I think it's worth the risk.
Yeah, I hope he plays. I think I agree with you. I'm just saying I can see that perspective. And also it's like if you're the Titans, it's like realistically is he going to do anything? And so then it's like a reminder to everybody. You know, maybe it's better to just be like, hey, next year, remember Femi?
He practiced well.
Yeah, here we go. It's a huge – I mean, because this is – as much as Cam Ward defines the class – it's hard to, like, be all that excited about the drafting of those guys who were good picks if your second-round pick is a zero.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if Cam Ward is good, then I'll take the second-round pick being a zero. That's fine. But, yeah, like, they need – the jury, I think, is still well out on Cam Ward. We're going to find out, you know, over the next couple of years. I'd like to see something from the second-round pick, right? And, again, I understand. I mean, it's the last week of the year. I mean, the realistic – outcome here, even if he plays, is he's probably not going to do a lot in this game, or we're going to be having the same questions about him heading into the offseason as we do right now, which is, can he give them anything heading into next year? But boy, it would be nice to, like, if he got in there and made and like had a sack, it'd be like, okay, cool, like get some positive momentum heading into the offseason if you're Femi Oladejo. Again, I have no idea whether or not he's even going to play, but he's been a full participant this week in practice.
Yeah, and it's just a reminder, you know, of just like a project in the second round, which is what everybody said from the start. And I don't know. I have no idea, like, how much he was going to have to wait to be picked, you know, before the Titans picked him. You know, there are always prospects. All teams can feel, or most teams can feel one way about someone, and they can all be totally wrong. That happens. But just the limited amount of time at the position and just the fact that he's a pro, just, you know, I know it's way easier now to second guess, but even at the time, it was like, really? This is, you know, there are other players here that have done more, have actually played and produced that you could have taken. You took him. It looks bad. It looks bad. But again, I guess if he is a project, he got hurt, he was on a bad team, well, then next year is when that's when it has to come to fruition. It has to.
Well, I'll tell you another one that it's worth keeping an eye on today, and I'd love to see get out there and play well. Number one, because if he doesn't play, you look at their secondary and it's like, can they stop anyone? Amani Hooker has had an ankle/toe all week long. He has not practiced. And he has not had the year that I think people wanted him to have. Certainly coming off a contract extension, you'd like to see him play better. But I'm thinking now, like, you know, as bad as it was last week against New Orleans in the secondary, he was out there. If he ain't out there on Sunday, like, is Trevor Lawrence going to throw an incompletion in the game?
Yeah. Yeah. Blitz a lot, maybe? Denard Wells, you know, you got whoever's playing safety, send him on blitzes a lot and just, like, hope that he's off target.
Yeah.
It's not great. And not a great – just the whole year for Hooker, you know. Not a great year for him. Certainly not surrounded by what you want to be surrounded by at that spot. But he signed that deal, and now you get into injuries. He has been more durable this year than some years of his career. But it's kind of a – you know, it's a little bit concerning, I would say, big picture with him. And certainly in this game, yeah, that'd be ugly. Could be ugly. Could be ugly anyway, but almost guaranteed being ugly now.
I mean, their secondary is in such a rough spot right now. I mean, they're going to be trotting out a secondary, either with or without Hooker, but certainly without Hooker on Sunday if he can't go. That is, I mean, you're going to look at it and you're going to say, the question in your mind is going to pop up, is this the worst secondary I've ever seen in an NFL game? Like, just purely by who is out there for them. That question is going to come into your mind when you see the Titans secondary that they throw out there this weekend.
Yeah.
Is this the worst one I've ever seen in the National Football League?
Yeah.
It's up there.
If you have no one close to, well, I understand, you know, like Winston is a guy who, you know, of course down the road could be good, but basically no one who should be a starter is a starter, is a starting level player. And basically practice squatters the entire – you don't see that too often. I mean, I'm sure you see it some. There's probably fans of other teams that would be like, oh, yeah, let me tell you about 2007. I mean, I guess I'd like to go back to, like, the 2008 Lions and see what they had trotting. I forget, but it was probably really bad. But still, usually you have one or two clear, that's a starter in the NFL players out there.
Yeah, and they could be – with. And now, you know, hopefully Hooker can get out there. But even with or without him, they're going to be in rough shape in the secondary. So, you know, that's a depressing end to the conversation of who we'd like to see have a great game on Sunday for the Tennessee Titans. But it's they are limited on the defensive side of the ball right now with what they could do. I mean, Latham is obviously really important here. You know, what are the Titans going to do at running back in the offseason? I will say, and I know Corey Curtis brought this up earlier this week with us. Spears is pretty bad last week against the Saints after being pretty good the previous weeks before that. So can he rebound? I don't know that – like, if Tajay Spears has a great game on Sunday, I don't know that my outlook on him is going to change. Like, to me, he is a nice third down back for you to be able to have, and I don't think he's ever going to be really anything more than that for the Titans. But it would be nice – to feel pretty good about him heading into the offseason without knowing exactly what they're going to do at running back. Like, Breece Hall keeps being a name that Titans fans throw out there. We'll see if they get that aggressive on the running back front. there have been some Titans fans we've heard from that look at what Pollard's done over the last month of the season and say, well, why not just roll it back one more time with Pollard? I am very interested to see how the Titans approach that. My guess is that they're going to move on from him, but I don't know that.
Yeah, I think you can do better. I think you go younger. Speaking of Corey, you know, I heard a good argument between Corey and Jake Lyman on that, with Corey making the case that Pollard would make sense to be back next year. I think you got to try to be a little bit better. Like Caleb says, Spears not running back one material. No, and no one thinks he is. I think the question with Spears is Spears important as your third down back moving forward? Is that, I mean, you can't address everything. And again, I think Spears is, you know, good guy to have around, all that stuff. So I kind of think he'll be around. Is Mullings a guy that, like, they feel like is going to have a big offseason and maybe be able to get more work? Or is he just the occasional goal line back?
I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, he's barely played this year. I mean, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, he's gotten 3 carries for 7 yards. So I have no idea.
Yeah, he had the 1 carry last week. I thought it looked pretty good. It's like, that's one of those things where, I mean, I guess I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of work for him in a game like this. He probably won't get it, but.
I mean, he's gotten 1 carry in each of the past 3 weeks. 1 for 3 against San Francisco, 1 for 0 against Kansas City, and 1 for 4 last week against New Orleans.
That 4 yard.
So he's going to get one on Sunday at least.
That 4 yarder looked pretty good. Just saying. It was as 4 yard carries go, not bad.
Good looking 4 yard run.
Yeah. Give him 2 carries this week.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Joe, we got a big showdown coming up this weekend in the Milky Pool.
Am I wearing women's clothing? Joe, do you have pointy nipples that show through the polo?
Is that thing heated?
I was going to say, I don't know if it's heated other than naturally by like suntan oil and... Yeah.
I would let them pee around the field.
I come from Ukraine. You not say Ukraine weak.
Ukraine not weak.
Ukraine has came to you. How about I take your little Boris?
Peter, I really appreciate how nice you are.
We also have the urinal, which hopefully Kaharsky will give us some videos.
Flush it out, you know.
Thank you, Peter.
Peter. Can you
It is time for the Rex Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Heal from the inside out. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Joseph, the floor is yours.
That is, that's quick work there. That's quick work. Good job, Ian. All right, I want to get back into real quick. We hit on it a little bit, but let's go through these again. So the SEC, now last night the SEC gave us a great game. It gave us the best game of the playoff in the Sugar Bowl. Pretty cool scene, right? Getting a little bit more Ole Miss fans than Georgia fans. Full house. Great, great scene. Now, I guess the fact that they played a great game, though, does that mean like they're good or just that they're mid and they just happen to play a great game against each other? The SEC is 2-6 in the postseason when not facing each other. Okay, so you've got that is Ole Miss over Tulane, as you've lamented many times, and then Texas over Michigan, which, again, as we know, Michigan, I think good hire with Kyle Whittingham, but he was just in the press box eating nachos, and Biff Pogge was on the sideline, and they've gone through all kinds of, you know, obviously upheaval and turmoil, and they were in that game for a while, by the way. Until Arch Manning took it over. By the way, Arch Manning looks pretty good. Arch Manning. You got Illinois over Tennessee, and you got Houston over LSU, Virginia beat Missouri, and, of course, you know, what happened yesterday to Alabama is embarrassing. So, first of all, I really want to hear what Greg Sankey has to say about this. And Greg Sankey he's always out there, and I get it. These commissioners are, you know, they're going to advocate for their leagues, but Greg Sankey's always out there with, we need strength of schedule to be a bigger deal. Seven teams should have been in. You know, Vanderbilt, look, Vanderbilt, great season. The best Vanderbilt team ever. They lost to four-loss Iowa. They lost to four-loss Iowa, you know? Do I think Iowa's a really good team? Yes. Iowa could have been a playoff team this year. But the bottom line is they're 8-4, and they beat Vanderbilt. And so it just doesn't help the SEC. The big thing about this is, I've said it before, but I just want to reiterate, and I really hope that everybody in this league, including the coaches, especially the coaches, because they're the ones driving this stupid idea, are thinking about this. The SEC perception is it's not what it was. And I think that's because reality is not what it was. It's not as good. It is not the dominant league, and I still think there are more good programs in the SEC and more programs that are capable in the SEC than any other league. But a season like this, and again, we may be talking about three straight national title games, not including an SEC team. Forget about winning it, not even in the national title game. We'll see. If Ole Miss can beat Miami, then the two-year streak will be broken. Clearly, it has weakened in this era, okay? So now you're telling me Herb Street, Sankey, whoever out there talking about, oh, well, you 9 games in the SEC and, you know, we can't schedule these games. Are you sure? Because I'd think about it. I'd think really hard about it. If you think that just winning enough games within your league that has been weakened and people, frankly, like people are still going to have a bias against the SEC because of whatever, all that's gone on over the years. If you think that just being good enough in your league is going to be good enough moving forward, I'd be real careful about that. Now, I know a coach would be like, well, you can say that if you want, but I just went through my schedule next year and we're playing, you know, 5 or 6 of the most talented teams on paper in the country, and so I'm not going to expose myself. Okay, I would remind you that if Miami didn't schedule and beat Notre Dame this year, they wouldn't have been in the playoff to kick Ohio State's butt the other night, okay? So I really hope that this is just empty threats. I think it is, but I hope so. I'm looking at next year. We got Clemson at LSU. Okay. You know, you got Baylor-Auburn return game. Okay, that's pretty good. There's two games.
Tennessee-Georgia Tech.
That's fine. Okay. I'll take that. That's fine. You know, Oklahoma and Michigan have a return game. Ohio State, Texas have a return game. So, you know, next year you're going to 9 and you still have decent games. You've got, week 3. I mean, NC State at Vanderbilt. If you play a Power 5 team or Power 4 team, that's fine, okay? But there's a lot of threats about these schedules getting weaker as time goes on. And I hope that all of this together convinces people. And I know, again, coaches think about job security and they think about the bottom line, think about the wear and tear on their players. And I get all that, but I would not go that way. And I think that we're seeing now why you should not go that way.
Well, I mean, the SEC moving forward, and part of their requirement is going to be you have to schedule a Power 4 team. Now,
you could go week.
What is the Power 4 team, right? Like, there are some big differences all over the map there of what that could look like.
Of course, the funny thing is just a few years ago, it'd be like, you're scheduling Indiana, really?
Yeah, exactly.
You're scheduling Vanderbilt, really? But yes, I think there are still some programs that, like, I don't know that I count. I don't know that I can count it if you schedule Boston College at this point, okay?
No disrespect to Boston College.
Yeah, all due respect.
All due respect.
Bill.
No, like, I mean, you can call it a downturn. You can call it whatever you want to call it. But the last 2-3 years, the SEC is, when they're head-to-head against the Big Ten and some of these other teams, it's not going well for them. So, I mean, is that a cycle? Is that going to change back at some point? We talked about the roster part of this earlier in terms of the movement. I just think that makes it a lot harder to have the dominant run that they've had, really, for like the majority of my life in the SEC. It has been far and away the best conference, and it really hasn't been all that close. And now it's not. Like, I mean, you could still make the argument that it's the best conference when you're talking top to bottom. You can make that argument if you want to, but the bowl results kind of are what they are. I mean, maybe Mississippi State steps in today against Wake and saves the day at 5-7.
Is that the Mayo Bowl?
Mayo Bowl? Yeah.
Wow, we've waited this long for the Mayo Bowl.
It's a long time to wait for the Mayo Bowl.
And that is important. I hope Greg Sankey's there. You know, dishing out some mayo if they happen to win that game. By the way, just there's four games today, and I know that like all the programs like they have all tried to, or at least the power program, like tried like hell to get out of these games because you can't possibly have a worse situation than having a game day on portal opening.
Yeah, it's really good stuff.
I mean, you can't. I don't even understand how you deal with that.
Like, of all the
how much
things,
attention do you even put toward the game today?
Of all of the things that boggle my mind about the current state of college football and how we've got here, and that could be anything from, you know, all the player movement we see in the portal, the playoff expanding, all these things that we've just yelled back and forth about over the last few years. The thing that boggles my mind the most is how collectively we've allowed this to happen, where we've got the portal going on at the same freaking time as the playoff, the bowl games, and the coaches all leaving at the same – like the fact that we've gotten all this going on and we can't fix the calendar that way boggles my mind that we can't do that.
Yeah, it's incredibly dumb. Even like you can't just do the portal Monday, you know? But – You know what would fix this? Someone brought this up, and it's a great point. It's like you could have this. You could have this like as a summer thing, just like again, like an off season, the NFL, or whatever. If you didn't have early enrollees,
yeah.
I mean, everybody's early enrolling now. I mean, you know, Jared Curtis is with Vanderbilt, and coaches all want that. But I mean, if everybody didn't have that, then you wouldn't have to worry about that. Like you could
basically have OTAs.
Yeah.
Yeah. 615-737.
Would that be so bad?
615-737-1025, our phone number. Teron Davenport will join us coming up next. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.